Instinctively, man has always been drawn to the sea. Its beauty, its mystery, its secrets. But there is also a vague uncertainty, a sense of intrusion into an alien world where man is unwelcome and completely at the mercy of the most terrifying predator on Earth. Man's deepest fear has risen again. Jaws, the revenge. This time, it's personal.
Welcome to They Call This a Movie, testing the strength of friendships one terrible movie at a time. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and other podcast services by searching They Call This a Movie. We are part of the Main Damie Network, and to find more from us, check out the website at themaindamie.com or on Twitter and Facebook at The Main Damie. Welcome back to They Call This a Movie. This is Anthony, and with me, as always, is Dan Aquino and Mark Myers. Say hello, gentlemen.
Hello, friends. How are we today?
Jake!
So I guess Mark is good. Mark, you're good?
Yes.
Okay. I am good as well. How are you? So, Dan, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Yeah.
I'm excited for this movie.
Yes. So, this episode will be coming out as The Meg hits theaters. So, we were going through all the amazing shark movies that we had at our disposal, and we came across the fact that Amazon Prime, I guess, in preparation for this podcast specifically, decided to drop every single Jaws movie on Amazon Prime.
So they got my letters.
Finally, Dan's prayers have been answered. And I think there was some back and forth between us of which one should we do. Should we do Jaws 3D or should we do Jaws the Revenge? And we decided to do Jaws the Revenge. I think mostly because I've seen Jaws 3 a bunch of times. So it's kind of old hat for me. But Jaws the Revenge, I don't think I've seen this since like VHS days. What about you guys?
I remember rushing home early 90s to watch this on TV.
Okay.
That was the first time I ever saw it. I think it was on the USA channel.
Okay. Yeah. Was it a special event or something?
I don't know. I can't remember what it might have just been, the TV debut of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all. I was too young to know exactly what was going on. It might have been like a Jaws-a-thon or something along those lines, but I'm pretty sure it was just the TV debut.
Gotcha.
Of, because this movie came in 1997, so
yes.
It probably debuted in 92, 93 on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So I just remember being super excited for it and rushing home with my mom to tape it. Which I don't think you're supposed to do, but shh, don't tell anyone.
Yeah, and I actually never saw it before, so.
You are in for a treat.
It was fun.
More or less, this was my first time seeing it. Like I said, I saw it in the VHS days, but I really didn't remember much of it besides the fact that Michael Caine was in it.
Yeah.
That was a nice surprise for me.
So this must have been during the time when his career was on the downswing, I guess.
He considers this his paycheck era, I think,
okay.
Or one of the paycheck movies that he's done.
Yeah, just need a job.
There's a really good quote from him. I'll probably quote it later about how he feels about this movie. I think he says he's never seen it before, but it goes further than that, which is it's pretty funny and pretty honest. Jaws the Revenge, 1987, directed by Joseph Sargent. And starring Lorraine Gary, Lance Guest, Michael Caine, and Mario Van Peebles. Lorraine Gary reprising her role as Ellen Brody because Roy Scheider said he wouldn't be caught dead in another Jaws movie.
So they literally made him dead in this movie.
Yeah, I think actually what I was reading, he said he would only come back if they killed him in the first 10 minutes. They thought about doing that, but then they went killing off another character in the first 10 minutes. So I guess we'll just get right into the quick synopsis of it. I think
before we start, the son, Michael, Is he the main character in Last Starfighter?
The actor?
The actor, yeah.
Lance Guest.
He's not Dennis Quaid somehow.
Yeah, no, because I saw the IMDb page of Last Starfighter, and he's like the first one credited, and it doesn't look like it would be in alphabetical order.
This is like the only time I've ever seen him, I think.
Okay.
No, he's been in a few good movies.
He's in Halloween 2.
Yep.
He is in The Last Starfighter, but I don't really know that movie, so I couldn't tell you.
Okay. No, I didn't know if you guys did know, because I saw when I was looking up the IMDb, and he was like the first one listed.
He is Alex Rogan in that movie, and that's video game expert Alex Rogan, so I guess he is.
Okay.
I guess he was a bit of an 80s star.
Yeah, those were probably the two headliners, I guess. Well, I don't know how much Michael Caine was a headliner back then, but in terms of pulling people in for this movie.
Mm-hmm. Weirdly, he has two acting credits in 2010 as Johnny Cash on both Late Show with David Letterman and Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. So I don't understand that. I don't understand why that would have happened.
I'm enjoying this tangent.
This might take further review. We got to look into this further.
You should have asked this on during the week so we could have fully fully looked into this.
Everyone knows how much research we usually put into our review.
Oh, you know what? I guess there was a Broadway musical called Million Dollar Quartet, and it looks like there was like a bunch of performers that were maybe Elvis and stuff like that.
Because
they performed Hound Dog on that episode of Late Night with Jimmy Fallon.
Okay, that makes sense.
So
interesting.
All right. So
all right.
The movie.
So that's all for the Lance Guest podcast. join us next week when our guest is Lance Guest. Jaws the Revenge. As Dan, I think, just mentioned, he is not played by Dennis Quaid, Michael. That actually goes into the idea that Jaws the Revenge completely ignores Jaws 3D, as if it didn't happen.
Yes, that's what it sounds like.
So, getting right into the plot synopsis, we open, and it's Amity Island in Christmas time. Ellen Brody is still in Amity. For some reason, I'm blanking on Roy Scheider's name. Chief Brody has died of a heart attack off screen, I guess, in between Jaws 2 and Jaws the Revenge. Sean is still living at home, and he's now working for the Amity Police Department. One night, he has to go out and clear some debris out of the bay. I guess it's like a broken pier or something like that. He's got to break down. He's got to clear the bay so that when the fishermen come in, they can come in, which is like one of the weakest reasons to get this guy on a boat.
Right.
Because like, oh yeah, no, the Coast Guard's busy, so the deputy's got to go do it because the other guy is dealing with.
I guess they always try to make it. They kind of try to make it seem like it's such a small island, and mm-hmm. they're like self-contained, so they take care of everything themselves. Like in the first Jaws, it's really. There's only two police officers that they make it sound like, right? It's Chief Brody and his the guy who lived there. I can't remember the guy's name. I've seen Jaws a billion times. It's just him and his partner, pretty much, right?
Yeah.
So I guess it's it's small town America where we don't need outside interference. It's in this like little nucleus, I guess.
Right. And Polly, the secretary, returns to this movie. I don't know if it's the same woman, but the Polly is still the secretary of the Amity Island Police.
She should be home collecting that pension of hers.
Yeah.
By the way, the insulation on that police station must be terrible if he heard her yell to him after what had to be at least 30 seconds of walking away from that door.
Yeah, she calls through the door twice, and he's able to come back and answer. So it's really all Polly's fault of what happens next. But the other deputy, I guess, is out stopping kids from cow tipping, because that's a thing that happens on Amity Island. And Sean goes out in a little boat While I guess there's some sort of choir going on, singing some Christmas carol. And he is quickly devoured by a shark to the dulcet tones of that choir. It's a pretty graphic scene. It reminded me a little bit of the opening scene, the Georgie death scene in the new.
He gets his arm ripped off. And
yeah, he's in a yellow slicker.
Help! And,
yeah, and he's screaming for quite a long time.
Oh, yeah, the shark definitely takes his time with Sean Brody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Would Bruce Willis consider this a Christmas movie, since he's now an authority on that?
Yeah.
That's
another podcast, but Bruce Willis could go fuck himself on that.
He's a crotchety old man now.
Yeah. I think I thought I made a ruling on that last year.
Yeah.
And
we all came to agreement, so.
Yes.
Yeah, but that was one thing that I found that they, I haven't seen the other ones, 2 and 3, in a while, but that they felt the need to put this around the holiday.
All the other ones take place in summertime.
Okay.
Not necessarily a summer holiday.
That's what
first
I meant.
First one, obviously, is 4th of July, and I think the other two are just
during the summer.
Just during the summer.
Yeah. I know Jaws 3D doesn't take place in a certain time period.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought that was a running theme that I missed.
Nope. No, they're not like Shane Black. So, yeah, Sean dies, and then they have a funeral, which then Michael comes to the funeral with his wife and daughter. He's an oceanographer down in the Bahamas, and he convinces Ellen that Amity Island, at least for the near future, is not a place that she should be hanging out. She should come down where it's warmer, where she should get away from the fact that Sean has just been brutally killed. And she decides to come. So she comes out to the Bahamas with them for Christmas. I guess the plan is Christmas through New Year, or, you know, shortly after that, where they meet Hoagie, dashing Michael Caine, who is a airplane pilot. I guess he's one of those, like, small little skipper planes taking off from Florida into the Bahamas.
I feel like he should have known what this movie was going to be when he saw the name was Hoagie. there's no way any British person is named Hoagie.
Right.
That's specifically an American name.
Yes. Yeah. So I'll just go right into, I mentioned earlier that Michael Caine does not regret this movie. He calls it one of his notorious paycheck pictures, along with The Swarm in 78, Ashanti 79, Beyond the Poseidon Adventure 79, The Island in 80, The Hand in 81, and Blame It on Rio in 1984. When asked about this movie in an interview, he answered, "I've never seen it, but by all accounts, it is terrible. However, I have seen the house that it built, and it is terrific."
That's such a he knows what he did was really bad, and we're like, yeah, well, look where I am.
Yeah,
these are nowhere near Nick Cage level paycheck movies,
right? But Hoagie is a pretty reckless pilot because he lets the girl fly at one point, and like they are pretty low to the ground at that moment. So it's kind of crazy that he's just like, oh yeah, take the wheel, and he plays with it. Like, oh, if you push it this way, the houses get bigger. If you pull it this way, they get further away. But they are like maybe 100 feet off the ground.
This might have been Michael Caine actually trying to end it all.
He's trying to kill this movie.
The director's like, Mike, what are you doing? Stop! Don't let her do this.
Yeah. So they meet Michael Caine's character, Hoagie, and Hoagie takes a liking to Ellen Brody for some reason.
They're both around the same age?
Yeah. It is the most age-appropriate relationship I think I've seen in a movie in a long time. But in 1975, Lorraine Gary, no offense, you would consider a handsome woman. And this is 12 years later, and she just gets more handsome. I mean, she kind of looks like Roy Scheider in a wig.
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, they said...
She's a very handsome woman.
She is a very handsome woman.
She was born in 37. Jeez.
Yeah, so I guess Hoagie tells her that, you know, he's tired of having one-way conversations, is how he puts it. So he romances her. I think he takes her to... I don't even remember what island he takes her to, but they kind of have a they walk in on a celebration. I think it was called like the Junkaroo Festival or something like that. Maybe it's Jamaica. I don't even remember. So they're having a good time, but Ellen is having visions of the shark and bad dreams about the shark is terrorizing her and her family. And she thinks, because she's insane, that the shark has a vendetta against her and her family. Which is the dumbest part of this movie.
By far. Is it?
There's a dumber part?
Towards the end, yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Okay. So
we'll get to it, I'll chime in when we get to it.
Okay. While this romance is going on, we follow Michael and his partner Jake, who are both oceanographers. I guess they're trying to get PhDs, and they're studying... conch shells. They're tracking them, and when they're doing their work, they get an encounter with a great white shark, which is weird because there are no great white sharks in the Bahamas.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't think they are natural to that habitat.
No, and that's one of the specific reasons why Jake thinks that they need to stop what they're doing and investigate this shark, because he thinks that's going to make them rich and famous.
Right.
So they have that encounter, and I think Ellen at this point has already told Michael not to give up his job, which seems like a pretty lucrative job. He's living in the Bahamas, fully supporting his wife and daughter. His wife has a job as a really shitty artist. She makes sculptures or like business professionals, I guess. She's like makes like industrial art, which probably isn't a huge lucrative business in the Bahamas.
Right.
Like, she makes sculptures that you would see in like an industrial park entrance, because they're just like twisted sheets of metal.
Right. It's almost as it's like I saw a sculpture someone made the Incredible Hulk out of like knives and forks and like tire hubs and everything like that.
Hubcaps.
Hubcaps. Thank you. So it's something similar to that.
Yeah. It just seems like they needed to give her some kind of job that would have put her by the water later in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Can't have her work in the water because that'd be weird.
Right. It really could have just been Jake and her are a team on the boat. It couldn't have been that difficult.
I guess they had to separate them, I guess, because they did have a daughter.
She needed to have her own identity.
Yeah.
And she hangs out with what's-his-name's wife as well, right?
Yeah. I guess Louisa.
Who works at the casino.
Yes. Jake's wife.
Yep.
It wasn't too bad, if I remember correctly. She looked okay.
And she's actually one of those, what I call Dick Wolf actresses that are like spread all over all Law and Orders.
Oh, is she?
Yeah. She's been in every Law and Order. Okay. At some point. So, I was looking up, I was like, I kind of recognize her. Then I realized that I must have seen her in a rerun of one of those episodes.
Mm-hmm. Michael's wife played a pretty integral role in The Sopranos. She played an FBI agent.
Yes.
That she befriended Adriana, which eventually led to her death.
I'm noticing most people in this movie actually went on to still have a career, except for Lorraine Gray.
Yeah, Lorraine Gary. Gary.
Yeah, this was it.
Yeah, she didn't have many many roles.
This was her last movie. This killed her.
Yeah, yeah.
Not killed her, but...
she cashed out.
Yep, she was like, I'm done. I've peaked.
Yeah. We mentioned Jake, played by Mario Van Peebles, who has... Is it a convincing accent? I don't know. I guess I don't know the accent very well.
At times it is.
Yeah.
At times it is, but there are certain areas where it's very hacky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They come across the shark. Before this even happens, Ellen warns Michael that he should give up his job and do something different, stay away from the water. And he thinks she's crazy because she's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
He tells Jake, don't tell my mom. This is going to be between us.
Because he's 12.
Yeah, he's 12.
Don't tell my mom.
Don't tell my mom.
But it doesn't take long for Jake to let it slip.
Yeah.
That they're about to make a huge discovery.
Because he's younger than 12. He's 10.
Yeah. They start trying to track the shark. But every time Jake tries to track him, the shark doesn't appear. But every time Michael goes in the water, the shark appears within about 15 seconds. So not only does Ellen start thinking that this shark has a vendetta against her family, Michael starts thinking that the shark has a vendetta against his family as well, or at least him.
It's the worst technology ever, that heartbeat monitor they have.
Yeah, you would think the currents would just pull that right out of the skin, like immediately.
When I first saw this movie, as young as I was, that one, I guess, chase scene through the wreck,
mm-hmm.
I thought that was actually kind of like, oh, all right, well, that's kind of scary, you know, being chased by a great white shark through, because at that time, that was the first I'd ever seen something like that. So younger me was actually kind of, I don't want to say scared, but like I was excited by that scene.
Yeah.
When he's going through and he uses the oxygen tank to shoot up.
I thought that was kind of cool. That was kind of interesting. That's cool.
My only issue with that is from the exterior shots of that boat, I don't see a space where a great white shark could fit through as easily as it did there. It looked like a smaller ship.
They cheat the size just a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. But again, then it also becomes a big Navy ship at some point.
Right. Do they say how big the shark is? 26 feet?
I don't remember if they mention it. I might have missed it if they did.
I know they obviously it's one of the biggest that I think they mentioned it's one of the bigger ones they've seen. So yeah, I would imagine it wouldn't be very easy for it to navigate through the hallways.
Yeah, and one of the scenes at the back of the fin, I could have sworn I saw a seam from it being.
The shark looks terrible.
The shark in the first one looked better. I remember thinking that.
Yeah. The shark in this one looks like a puppet, like a sock puppet.
Yeah.
Just someone open it, like someone's hand in there, closing the mouth.
Rah. Like the mouth looks felt.
It's the Saturday Night Live shark.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So there's really not much plot in it. If you've seen a Jaws movie, you've seen them all. So part of the time is Hoagie and Ellen in their Centrum Silver romance commercial. And then Michael and Jake trying to track the shark comes to a head, I guess. And if I'm skipping over something important, just let me know. Comes to a head when the art unveiling is happening on the beach, and that's where Carla is showing off her latest statue for the city. And their daughter Thea is going on to a banana boat with a whole bunch of like neighbors, and then the banana boat gets attacked by the shark. So then that causes Ellen to decide it's up to her to put an end to this once and for all.
Which has become personal.
Yeah, which, by the way, has always been personal. The death on the banana boat might be the funniest one of the movie because it looks like she literally jumps into the shark's mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's a geyser of blood, which is pretty good.
Yes. If I'm mistaken, just let me know. There's only like two deaths in this movie, right?
No, three.
Three? What's the third?
Depending on which ending you go with.
Okay, so right? But up until the ending, it's just Sean and this random woman.
Yeah.
Right? Yes. And a couple fish, I think.
Okay.
Are we counting fish?
No.
Okay.
We never count.
So two.
So,
their lives matter too, Aunt, all right?
So Ellen absconds with Michael's boat, the Neptune's Folly, and decides to...
Solid name.
Just head out into the open water and do something. Is she sacrificing herself? She's prepared to die for this fish?
I think it's like mano-a-mano kind of thing. Right. Either you're going down or I'm going down.
It doesn't seem like she's got much of a plan.
Yeah, and even if she believes what she's thinking, sacrificing herself to the shark won't stop the shark from going after the rest of her family.
Correct. And also, I don't know about you, but I don't know how this shark is figuring out who a Brody is. I'm assuming it's by blood.
Their superior sense of smell.
Ellen Brody does not have Brody blood. Well, she is a Brody through marriage.
But technically the shark's not going after her.
Well, that was her plan, right?
Well
that's the shark goes after her.
The shark goes after her.
Especially at the end.
Well, at the very end, but not any time during the movie.
Well, that's because she wasn't in the water any time besides that.
But that, yeah, so technically the shark isn't sensing her. It's sensing the other.
But she was on the boat by herself, and he attacks the boat. He attacks Neptune's Folly. Are you saying Neptune's Folly smells like Brody?
It might have.
Yeah.
It might. There could have been traces of Brody.
They got Brody stank all over.
That's where the daughter was conceived, on that boat.
Oh, okay. There you go.
All right. I can run with this.
Okay. So while she's absconded with the boat, and Michael and Jake originally attempt to catch up to her in a tiny little speedboat, but then they come across Hoagie, who's fishing, and he's like, no, I've got a plane. You guys are idiots. Let's go. So eventually they track down Ellen, and just as the shark is about to attack the boat, they kind of swoop down low, and I guess it's somewhat effective in trying to distract the shark a little bit. But then Hoagie just straight up just crash lands the plane into the water.
You do get a pretty cool aerial shot of the shark jumping at the boat.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I give this film credit where credit's due. That was an interesting take, or an interesting shot, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then so he crashes the boat, which was a complete waste of a boat.
Yep.
Like, I don't know who's, like, I don't know if he has a boss, he's going to be pretty pissed off.
I think he's self-employed, isn't he?
If he's self-employed, hopefully it's insured.
The Colombia drug cartel. That's who.
In the novelization, that is correct. The novelization in this book, which I think was based on the original script, Hoagie is running drugs.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'd buy that.
Which is an interesting, and they do mention it. They do, I think Michael is skeptical of Hoagie the whole time, and he's like really protective of his mother. And I think that's one of the reasons why he says that he's skeptical of him, because a lot of pilots that come in and out of the Bahamas are usually smuggling drugs.
Which would have made this movie 10 times better.
It would have been interesting.
If they focus on that aspect, it's almost as in an aunt would know this if he read the goddamn book I gave him, which is now lost to time. The original Jaws. Yeah, the original Jaws book, which was given to me as a gift. But this is, we'll settle this. We're going to hash this out later. In the original novelization of Jaws by Peter Benchley, the reason why the mayor wants to open the beaches on the 4th of July is because he's under mafia control. So he owes the mafia money, and that's why he needs the beaches open.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have been a pretty good subplot, but they chose not to go with that, obviously, in the first movie. It's something that could have been pretty interesting to go with this. You know, like Hoagie's a maybe an ex-drug smuggler, or he is smuggling drugs, but...
He does mention that he transports laundry, as he puts it.
And we were just too young to realize, God,
yeah,
they're so smart. So,
either he's laundering money, or he's moving some drugs.
He also piloted...
Or he really could be sending laundry across the island.
Could be.
He also piloted a plane full of nuns, apparently.
All right, he's always got these anecdotes that we never get to hear the end of.
I don't believe a word of that, though. I feel like it's just a bad joke he's trying to do.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So then Hoagie crashes the plane into the water, and Michael and Jake are able to swim to the Neptune's Folly, and then the shark attacks the plane, seemingly with Hoagie still inside.
He has a pretty funny line when the shark comes at him. I can't remember exactly what it is. He's like, holy shit. And then he just like dives back in.
He was like,
in that Michael Caine voice.
Yeah, holy he's like, shit. He's making a joke, because Hoagie always makes a joke every chance he gets.
Yeah.
But he's just like, oh, you passengers are all the same. Something like that. You never say goodbye. And holy shit.
Yeah. Oh, it's just that Michael Caine voice. Because he does have a very dashing voice, obviously.
Yeah.
He's very charismatic. And just like, holy shit, and he just dives back into the plane.
It's a pretty good moment. Then the shark tears apart the plane, giving enough time for Jake and Michael to get on the boat and, I guess, concoct some sort of plan with this this higher-frequency transmitter that, I guess, their only plan is to just drive the shark insane.
And that is the worst part of this movie. And that is the craziest single part.
Go ahead.
The way that they get the shark to go crazy. First of all, I don't think sharks are they might be. Because they specifically say the reason the shark attacked the plane is because of the electromagnetic field that the plane emits. I don't know if that's true or not. I'm not a shark expert.
I love how in each of these episodes, we always have to preface some point that we make by saying we're not an expert in such and such a field.
Right. if we were, we would not be doing this podcast.
I'm not a paleontologist. I don't know anything about. I don't know about this, but
I don't know much about storms and all that stuff for Fantastic Four. I'm not an astrologist or whatever. Yeah, I'm not a shark expert, but I don't think that they're driven mad by electromagnetic frequencies. So basically, whenever they flash this transmitter, the shark goes nuts and roars. It legit roars. It's like a Godzilla roar. And I don't think sharks roar.
They do not.
My wife just let out a little chuckle and I'm like, the shark roars. Oh, jeez. And that is the single craziest part of this movie.
Yeah.
Not the flashback to Chief Brody shooting the shark in the first one as Ellen rams the boat into the shark.
God.
Which explodes, and then the shark looks like a mechanical device falling.
We're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but yes, some of the worst things of this is the historical footage, as we'll say.
Sorry.
In order to get it, they have to get this transmitter into they have to get it to eat it. And in that process, the shark basically rips off the bow of the ship, along with Mario Van Peebles, who is more or less in the same situation we see Quint in the last time in Jaws. He's like half in his mouth. He's just hanging there, so he should be dead. Spoiler alert, he doesn't die.
Well, depending.
Yeah, depending on which version you watch, I guess. But we're going with the one that's on Amazon Prime, which I guess is the official one.
Yeah.
The happy ending, I guess. Michael Caine survives. He comes climbing back on the boat. And one of the most annoying parts of this, I'm going to backtrack a little because this happens before Mario Van Peebles dies. So the boat, I guess, stalls out after the attack with the shark, and they have to get the boat to work again because their plan is just to get the fuck out of there, which is a good plan.
It's a rescue mission at this point.
Yeah, so Michael Caine is barking orders to everybody, and everybody's doing their job, but he always has to tell Mrs. Brody twice. Everything he tells her to do, she's off staring off into space, and then he has to be like, so Ellen, pump it out. Ellen, I need you to get the pumps. Everything she does, he has to tell her twice. And it's annoying as hell because it's just so repetitive.
She's dismayed. She's focused on other things. That's supposed to be...
Maybe she's in shock. I get it. Yeah. But it's annoying.
No, I remember thinking the same thing where she blames Mike and Jake for Hoagie's death. And I'm obviously quotation marks. How is that their fault? It's your fault.
Yeah, you're the one out here.
Yeah, you got him killed, potentially, which we obviously said he does not die, which was kind of a bummer. But like you said, the body count in this movie is staggeringly low.
So, again, Mario Van Peebles gets eaten, we think.
Half eaten.
Yes. And then at that point, the shark is getting his brain fried by this transmitter signal. And while that's he keeps approaching the boat, and while that's happening, Ellen starts seeing visions from the first movie, of which she shouldn't be able to flashback to.
She wasn't there. Yep.
She wasn't there when she was like she remembers Chief Brody saying, "Smile, you son of a bitch." Is that how he tells this to her?
and I was
like, "Smile, you son of a bitch," and it blew up. And it was amazing. And now I have PTSD.
I thought they specifically mentioned that he doesn't talk about what happens. Right? It's like Chief Brody never really mentioned.
I would imagine. But she can't see it.
Right. It should have been different in her mind how he says it.
The only thing she should remember from Jaws 1 is getting drunk all the time and then like running while Michael's in the bay and then having to hold her side because she has cramps while she's running.
And dreaming about plowing Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah.
Which happens in the book. If you happens knew...
I know what book, happens in the book.
You would have known that. You would have known it.
But it's not in the movie.
Shit out of Richard Dreyfuss's character.
But it's not in the movie, so she can't flash back to that.
Well, she can imagine it. It gets pretty graphic, by the way, with Mrs. Brody and Hooper.
The handsome Mrs. Brody.
Very handsome.
There's this one point in the book, or I really want to say, but it is maybe I'll say it out of once we're done recording. Okay. It's like X-rated pretty much. So are we a child-friendly podcast? We're not.
No,
right?
No. Okay. I've said fuck I think at least once on every episode.
Okay. Well, that doesn't necessitate an R. That's like a hard PG-13.
Right. I think we're tagged explicit on iTunes.
Ooh, edgy. I like it. Yeah.
All right. So the shark comes barreling towards the boat, and despite Hoagie's telling of Mrs. Brody to steer away, she heads towards him and impales the shark with the broken bow of the ship. And I guess it hits the transmitter? We had no knowledge that the transmitter would be explosive.
Yeah, they don't say that specifically. It's just a transmitter. It electromagnetic pulses, I thought.
Right. But I guess it is explosive because then the shark explodes. And I think they just reuse footage from the first movie in that explosion.
I think when the shark corpse comes sinking to the bottom of the ocean, I think that is from the first movie.
Yeah. Pretty sure that they just recycled that footage.
Yes. I believe you are correct there. And why not? That's a pretty good scene.
Mm-hmm. So then the shark dies. And in Hooper fashion, Mario Van Peebles comes popping up out of the water right after the shark dies. And is alive and able to crack jokes as he's getting brought back to safety.
Right. His internal organs squished.
Yeah. There's no way they... Because the boat... Does the boat get completely destroyed? Or are they just all knocked off the boat? Because they're all, like, holding on...
Yeah.
Right. Again, I don't know how they might why that happens, who knows. But there's no way Mario Van Peebles... Not Melvin. Mario Van Peebles survives the trip back. Even
he's
if
he's bleeding out.
He's bleeding out. Somehow he's still intact, except for, like severe bites... but he somehow survives it.
But Michael and Jake got to have their Jack and Rose moment.
Yes. Yes.
He's almost completely in that shark's mouth, correct?
Yeah.
I remember. Yeah, I don't know how he just sustains minor bite wounds.
Like, have you ever seen that behind-the-scenes photo of Spielberg sitting in the shark's mouth?
Yes.
That's essentially, he's in that position.
Yeah.
He's fully in that mouth.
Oh, yeah.
So but
I remember the version that I saw. He dies.
He dies. I guess this is the official version.
Yes, uh-huh. I'm assuming that was the theatric version. Mm-hmm. I guess.
This is the director's cut we watched.
I suppose.
And then I guess that's the end of the movie, right? There's nothing really that happened. I guess there's like a little post scene where they fly. They fly away.
Yeah, there's a flyover.
And that's then he's telling a story as the credits roll.
Right. That's it.
That's Jaws the Revenge. I will say this movie has a 2.9 on IMDb. I don't think that's fair.
I'd say mid threes.
I'd say it's a 4. Okay. I thought Fantastic Four had a 4 on IMDb, and I feel like it's a 4. I think there are worse shark movies out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And there wasn't really any terrible acting in this movie. Like,
no, I think just the premise is stupid.
Yeah.
Like the idea that the shark has it out for the Brody family and is able to discern who is a Brody and who isn't is ridiculous. But it's not really doing that good of a job because, you know, killed the one person. He didn't kill Thea and she was on the banana boat. He killed the other one.
Right.
I think this movie has a similar problem for me as Jaws 2 does. And that's that the character that is obviously insane is proven correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Like
it
all
feeds
of their,
into their
right.
Psychotic, I guess.
Right. Because in Jaws 2, Roy Scheider, Chief Brody, has obvious post-traumatic stress disorder to the point where he shoots at a school of fish on a crowded beach.
Yeah.
Right.
That movie should be about him, should have no shark, and should just be about him dealing with his PTSD. That's what Jaws 2 should have been.
It's battling the shark within.
Yes. And then this movie is sort of the same. She thinks that the shark is after them because it killed Sean and it killed Chief Brody. But it didn't kill Chief Brody because Chief Brody died from, I guess, a heart attack. And you could say it's due to stress after surviving multiple shark attacks, sure. But that's not what she means.
Well, she specifically
that.
Thinks the shark killed Chief Brody by like some supernatural force, almost like right. it did. It finally got him, I think she says, or something like that. It finished the job,
which is insane.
Yeah.
In the novelization, again based on the original script, apparently the shark has a voodoo curse placed on it.
I like it.
Because of some sort of disagreement Michael has with somebody else.
Interesting.
That's even crazier, but slightly makes more sense.
Yeah, yeah, I'd be more apt to believe that there's a voodoo curse on something than the shark just knows who a certain person is.
Right. It's like Weekend at Bernie's too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and it explains the one random line where someone goes, "You don't believe that voodoo."
Oh, right. It was right. Probably Jake, right?
Yeah, it's either Jake or Hoagie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this movie is, I think, easily the worst sequel. You know, I don't think I'm speaking out of school for saying that, but I don't think it's a. I don't think it's a 2.9.
Oh, I did read a while ago that sharks can hold grudges, but not against people, because they very rarely come into contact with people.
Mm-hmm.
But they can sense another shark or another sometimes mammal, sometimes fish. They can sense when either one has gotten away or one that it's attacked before. But I don't believe it extends out to people, and especially I don't think it's going to change its habitat, because that's a huge change.
Yeah,
going into those kind of waters, because that's incredibly warm waters, and I don't think they swim in warm water.
Yeah, and I guarantee you that study came out right around when this movie was written.
Probably. This movie actually did pretty well in terms of money spent and money gained. Because this movie, I think, the budget was $29 million or $23 million, and it made $51
yeah.
at the box office. So it made its money back.
Yeah, yeah. They got paid.
Worldwide gross, $31.
$31?
Yeah, that was worldwide.
Okay, so... It says box office $51.9 million, right?
Where are you looking?
Oh, I'm on Wikipedia.
I'm on IMDb, so they're not matching up.
Okay, so it's probably IMDb.
It was still a net positive.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Surprisingly.
And Michael Caine got a big house out of it, so.
It's pretty quick. It's short. It's a short watch, which is nice. It's only 90 minutes.
Yeah, I didn't have to look at the clock. At all, which is a good sign for these movies.
Yeah, it goes by pretty quick. Most of the characters are kind of forgettable, though, and
yeah.
you don't really know much about Carla Brody other than she makes really shitty art.
Yeah,
Hoagie, and you only know him because he's the biggest name in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much it.
Okay. I'm gonna run through. I guess that's all for the plot. I'm gonna run through some factual errors. And then get into our favorite game, trivia.
Yeah.
Just
We got to come up with a snappy name for the trivia.
Yeah.
Because it's like, now it's time for everyone's favorite game, trivia.
That's true.
Tweet us at the main Damie if you have any suggestions for the trivia contest.
Yes.
They call this a trivia game.
They call this a trivia game. I like it. As we mentioned, the shark manages to roar like a lion with its mouth when its mouth is underwater. Doesn't happen. Let's find some good ones. Michael Caine's plane crashes in the ocean, but when he climbs aboard the Brody's boat, his clothes are dry.
I didn't even notice that.
Caine explained that they waited so long for the camera to turn over that his shirt and pants dried in the sun.
That's pretty good.
Let's see. There was a good one that I saw. It is stated repeatedly in the film, especially by Jake, that it is very rare to find a great white shark in warm water. In fact, great white sharks can be found in almost any temperature zone. What is rare is what happened in 3 of the 4 Jaws movies, to have great white sharks in the cold waters of the American Northeast.
Ah, there you go. So it's completely the opposite of what we were saying.
Yeah, yep. Well, you're not a shark expert, Dan.
That's correct. I said that, I prefaced it. so you can't blame me.
Yes. Amity in New York Island, which I thought it was Massachusetts, actually. It is. Is approximately 1,250 miles from the Bahamas. It would be impossible for the shark to swim such a distance in less than 3 days.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Unless if it was under a voodoo curse.
Then it'll go anywhere.
It's a ghost shark.
In the closing credits, thanks goes to one person listed as being from the California Academy of Sciences. California is spelled incorrectly.
Nice.
A number of scenes depict Jake and Michael speaking while Michael is underwater and wearing scuba gear. It would be impossible for Michael to speak with an underwater breathing device in his mouth.
It's true.
Yeah.
All these little things that we don't even pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure there's somebody screaming. Some diver's like, that's impossible!
Well, what if they didn't? How scary would that be? Like, oh yeah, that makes sense. That's legit. Nothing here. Nothing to see here. Keep going.
It's a movie.
Yeah.
So
I never thought of that.
It's almost like you wouldn't be able to fly to a meteor coming to Earth and drill a hole into it and put a nuclear bomb on it. Completely unrealistic.
The problem is, when I saw this as a little kid, I thought nothing of it, and I thought nothing of it as a 31-year-old person. So I think that's the problem.
That's true.
But again, I'm not a scuba diver, so I'm no expert in that.
Yeah.
And the tagline of this podcast should be, we're not experts.
We know bad movies when we see them.
Oh, yep, that's our skill.
I think the tagline's in this one. This time it's personal.
Boom.
Boom.
Love it. So that's going to do it for the summary portion of it.
Yeah, I'll add one line. That tagline definitely sounds like something a coked up producer would have said in a meeting. Mm-hmm. My new Jaws movie. Now it's personal.
Even though it's attacked the same family 3 other movies.
Yeah.
Specifically that family.
Where would you guys put this in ranks of the movies we've seen so far?
This is probably better than Fantastic Four, in my opinion.
Okay, so top. Yeah. I would say so, too.
Yeah. I think the nostalgia of it kind of carries it for me. Being that I love the first Jaws movie so much. And I even like the second Jaws movie. It's not a terrible movie. This one, the shark looks terrible, and the acting is decent. I'd probably say it's definitely the best acting we've seen thus far out of any of the movies.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I'm going too far out on the limb to say that. So, and again, this was made for a theatrical release, unlike the other movies we've pretty much seen.
Yeah, so this is our first movie that actually saw a theatrical release, actually. Did you mention it?
Yeah, so you get that production value out of it.
Yeah. Fair point.
Yeah, yeah. And the acting is, like you said, as a whole, you know, it's good acting. Like, the other ones had like, one or two actors that were fine.
And good. Except for Skyscraper.
Well, Skyscraper.
Skyscraper did not have a single performance that was any good. And that includes Malibu, before anybody says it.
No, I was going to say it was the kid on the big wheel. He's the best actor in the movie.
Was that Billy Bob?
Yeah.
Billy Bob, yeah. Oh, no, Billy Ray.
Billy Ray. What are you doing here?
Billy Ray?
Where's your mama? I will say, so far, Skyscraper has the best... one of the best lines out of any movie we've seen. The excuse me for still believing in Sunday walks and babies.
Yeah.
That's still the best line out of any. Although Michael Caine's Oh Shit is pretty good.
That's a pretty good one from this
movie.
Yeah,
that's pretty good. I didn't know Peter Benchley actually wrote this movie.
Did he, or are they just saying based on characters?
I guess based characters is in parentheses, so is that a...
Yeah, it's just based on the characters. So Michael de Guzman is the credited writer on this movie.
Okay. Yeah, I just see Peter Benchley. Yeah. So I guess it's just... Okay, that makes sense then.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's not a terrible... Well, it is a bad... It is a very bad movie. But it's... It ranks up there with one of the better ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think... I didn't hate myself while watching this, and I think that's the silver lining we look for in these movies, is which ones don't make us want to kill ourselves.
I also think this is the first movie we're reviewing that has won an award.
Are you talking about a Razzie?
Yeah, it was nominated for 7 and won a Razzie. So okay. It has that going for it.
What Razzie did it win? Don't look it up. Don't look it up.
Okay, I'm not. I don't know. Didn't even know that they had. I didn't know they had categories for Razzies. I thought it was just like, this movie sucks, you win a Razzie.
Okay. So we're gonna get right into trivia, I guess, at this point. So who went first last time?
I think I did.
Skyscraper trivia.
I can't remember.
This is the fourth movie we've seen, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it would start with me.
It would start with you.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm just gonna ask that question. So if you haven't listened to any podcast before, we have two categories that we switch off with, pertaining to the movie that we just watched. So for this week, we have Jaws sequels and shark trivia.
Ooh.
So we're going to start with Jaws sequels. And based on the thing that Dan just mentioned, we're going to start with this question first. Mark, your first question. Who was nominated for the Razzie's Worst Actor for their role in the film?
Mario Van Peebles?
No.
Oh.
Dan, can you steal?
I think so. I'm just going to say Lorraine Gary.
No.
Oh, what? She's terrible.
Bruce the Shark was nominated for Worst Actor for his role in the film.
That's pretty good.
So, I didn't even know they named him Bruce.
I think there were some credits I was looking at. I think it was called Vengeance.
Vengeance the Shark. That's pretty good.
All right, so now we're going to go to Dan, and we do snake rules for these categories. So Dan will get two questions in a row. Dan, outside of the Jaws franchise, Lorraine Gary acted in what other Spielberg-directed film?
Close Encounters?
No. Mark, can you steal?
E.T.?
No.
Oh.
1941.
Oh, okay.
The comedy, right? That's a comedy movie?
Yeah.
I've seen that movie, too. I should have known that.
All right, so we're going to general shark trivia.
All right.
And it's back to Dan.
Expert.
Yeah.
Shark expert Dan Aquino. Your question is, which state averages the greatest number of shark attacks annually?
Hawaii?
No. Oof. Mark, can you steal?
I hope it's not an obvious one, but I'll say Louisiana.
No.
No, okay.
What's an obvious one? Okay. Florida, perhaps? Florida.
Yeah.
Florida is the answer. You guys are 0 for 6, really.
It's not looking good.
Not looking good. Okay, back to Mark.
Yes.
What is the term used for a baby shark?
Oh, Jesus.
This one I actually think I know.
I don't know. I don't even know if it's a word. For some reason, the word spurling is coming in my head, but I don't think that's a word.
John Spurling.
Yeah. We'll go with it. It's wrong, but yeah, that word is in my head for some reason.
So, the word you're going with is a word you just made up.
Yes.
Okay. Spurling is incorrect. Dan, can you steal?
Is it a pup?
It is a pup.
There we go. Bam!
Dan
shark expert.
Gets on the board.
Shark expert. It's not fair, Ant. From your head, shark expert.
I kind of want Spurling to be the answer, though. My turn, right? Now
it's back to Mark.
Oh, God damn it. I was on a roll.
Mark, yeah. Jaws sequels trivia. All
right.
We're going to Jaws 3D for this one. Which Fast Times at Ridgemont High star was considered for a role in Jaws 3D?
Star. Thinking of the time frame, Judge Reinhold?
Incorrect. Dan, can you steal?
I don't know her name. I'm going to assume it was the girl who comes out of the pool. I don't know her name, though.
Girl who comes out of the pool is incorrect.
Yeah.
The correct answer was Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Yeah.
Not the girl who comes out of the pool.
Who is Phoebe Cates.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
Now it's back to Dan.
Gremlin's own Phoebe Cates.
Oof. This is a tough one, this round, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is hard.
Go ahead. Jaws 2 was the highest grossing sequel ever made until what film?
I'm going to say Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
Incorrect. Mark, can you steal?
That's bullshit. That, you know it's right.
Highest grossing. Would it be Empire? Strikes Back?
No. Incorrect.
I was trying to...
It's Return of the Jedi, isn't it?
Incorrect.
Oh.
Rocky 2.
Rocky 2 is the correct answer.
Ah, shit!
Is it really?
It is.
I thought Rocky 2 came out before Jaws 2.
So did I. I thought all the Rockies were before it.
That's what I get.
So is
you,
it...
you let your hometown down, man.
I let him down. Yeah.
So it's, is it Dan?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, back to shark trivia.
My specialty.
What is the largest shark?
In existence, or?
What kind of shark is the largest shark?
Whale shark?
That's correct.
Oh, shit, all right. Yeah, I knew that.
Shark expert.
But I thought they weren't, for a second I thought, I was like, oh, but that's not a shark.
But whale shark is the correct answer.
There we go. I'm taking it to Mark. I'm putting him to task.
So it's Dan, Mark has to get this one or else the shutout.
Yeah.
First ever shutout.
Let's go.
Mark, your question is, in what way are sharks' eyes different from other fish?
That's a hard question. Holy shit.
Different. They can only see in their peripheral? Like, you know?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Dan, can you steal?
Probably not. The difference between a shark's eyes and a regular fish's eyes?
Mm-hmm.
What are they? I think they have a sheath on them, like a protective sheath.
I'm gonna say that's incorrect.
But you don't know for sure.
They have eyelids.
That's what I was getting at. You gotta let me have that one. Come on.
He ran through the shark category.
I did. I would get a standing ovation if this was Jeopardy.
Regardless, Dan won 2-0.
Yeah.
Shut out.
Yep.
What's the count? 3-1 right now?
It is 3-1.
Yep. I somehow won Skyscraper Trivia.
That was somehow.
You know, it's not my stacks of Anna Cole Smith books.
Somehow. I'm surprised you were able to look through the pages, Mark.
All right. So for our final question, our tiebreaker for shits and giggles. How many humans die, not including off-screen via natural causes, so not Martin Brody, throughout the Jaws franchise?
Ooh.
And this version of Jaws the Revenge.
Okay. So, right there, that's 2 people. I don't remember how many people die in Jaws 3D. We know in the first one there's 3, right? The Kittner boy, the swimmer, and Quint. I'm going to say 8.
I was going to say 12.
Wow. The answer is 21.
Oh.
Jeez, really?
There are 7 people that die in Jaws 2.
Oh, yeah, I don't remember. Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Well, the guy who gets his leg bit off, right? That's the first Jaws.
There are... Okay, so I'm going to go through it. There are 5 in Jaws.
Okay.
7 in Jaws 2. Jaws 3 has 5. And then Jaws the Revenge, there's 2.
Wait, so... There's 5 people who die in the first Jaws movie?
Chrissy. Alex Kittner.
Right.
Ben Gardner.
That's right.
The random guy that gets knocked over the rowboat when Michael almost dies.
Okay, that's when his leg falls off, right?
And then Quint.
Did you count Pipit?
Pipit, no, is not a human.
Aw. That's sad.
Bet.
That's right before the Kittner boy gets it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I don't remember Jaws 2. Well, yeah. What did Mark say?
It's a 12.
Yeah. So you were closest without going over, Mark.
Hey, Price is Right rules. Nice.
Yeah. So you don't lose. You don't get the shutout, let's say.
Yeah.
All right. Nice.
Very good.
So this is going to come out for the Meg?
Yes, this will air as you are listening to this now. This is airing the week that the Meg comes out, which I think
nice.
In terms of hours, it's like a week after this coming week.
Okay.
Nice.
August 10th, I believe.
Yes, and then you probably won't hear from us until September, I guess. We have yet to decide what movie is going to be for that week, for that month. Or maybe we'll start doing these a little more often. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I'm sure
we could find some stuff.
Yeah, that's it for Jaws the Revenge. You can listen to, if you don't know how to get to us for this podcast, it'd be weird to listen to it. But you can find this podcast on They Call This a Movie. Just search for it on Google or, you know, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, theycallthisamovie.podbean.com. We are on Overcast, all those, anything that kind of connects to a, your iTunes is where you could find us. The Main Damie is, you can find that on Twitter and Facebook at The Main Damie. What else? What am I missing? What about you guys? What are you connected to? How do we find you on Twitter?
Well, you could find me at daquino122. You could also get in touch with the other podcast I'm a part of with my lovely wife, who's sitting right next to me. Give me a high five. Bam! At the _MCU_podcast. And you could also check out some of the artwork that she's done, because she did the artwork for this podcast.
Yes, shout out to Jenny Aquino. She's like at Jenny_Aquino, right?
That is correct. Right, Jenny_Aquino. There's no numbers or anything crazy like that.
Right. She did the very lovely logo featuring us as cartoon characters, which we were all very excited about.
Yes. Yeah, it's pretty good. It makes us actually look better.
I like how she captured the essence of my enormous forehead.
She took all of our flaws and just made them much bigger. My ginormous bald head and Mark rooting for the Golden Knights. It's really, she goes, I didn't think you were going to notice that. Like, it's the first thing I noticed.
Was the Golden Knights?
Yeah, go Knights.
No, really, a really, really great design, and I appreciate the work that you did on it.
Yeah.
Mark,
yes,
I'll plug some stuff.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at Off the Mark Tweet. DMs are open. You can
slide right in.
You can also follow me on our Real Play D&D podcast at Stranger Damies is the Twitter feed. And we release episodes every Wednesday, where, you know, we just sit around, play Dungeons and Dragons. Sort of, you guys are getting to learn how to play the game as players. I'm learning how to do it as a DM, and we're trying to tell a good story in between and just have fun. It's a pretty good time. As we go along, you guys get better and better. So stick with it if you're starting in the beginning. These guys do get a lot better with the role playing and the story starts to come together nicely. Next week, I don't know if it'll be before or after this airs, will be episode 30 of Stranger Damies. So, yeah. I haven't decided if I'm going to do an extra long episode and just, you know, kill out the rest of this session I have, because we still have our live session episodes to break down. So
yeah, we're ahead of the game right now.
Yeah. Yeah, we're pretty much ahead. So, yeah, just look out for that. If you want to, you can send us, you know, questions or, you know, constructive criticism over at Stranger Damies. You know, because if we ever do a second episode of Talking to Strangers, it'd be nice to have some questions from the community. So I'll probably reiterate this on, you know, the tag out of the next Stranger Damies episode. But yeah, so that's two places you can follow us there. Stranger Damies, like Ant said for this one, is, you know, iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, you know, anywhere you can listen to a podcast, essentially. It's up on there. And yeah, so you guys are getting to, you know, starting to crest through the middle of the first act. So it's getting pretty intense. So
great. And I am at Ant Delvec. And that's all the time we have for today. As is tradition, here on They Call This a Movie, we always tell the director of the movie and that we just watched to go fuck themselves. This week, it's Joseph Sargent's turn. So for Dan Aquino and Mark Myers, this is Anthony Delvecchio telling Joseph Sargent to go fuck himself.